some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
This much.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer with Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is June 1st, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host, joined tonight by Ray Dieter, my co-host. Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com is our sponsor, and along with greatbrewers.com. Tonight, Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by greatbrewers.com, a great source of beer information and education. Test your beer knowledge, find great beer in your neighborhood, and check out the events calendar on all greatbrewers.com. How you doing, Ray?
I'm doing well. It's kind of nice and cool in the studio. The fans are turning around. It's just a great breeze going on. Feeling so comfortable. How about you, Jimmy?
I love it. I'm sweating like a mad dog. I'm going to cut to the chase. We got two special guests tonight I'm so happy to have on. First, we have Brian Ewing from 12% Imports, one of the new young favorite importers in New York City. How you doing, Brian?
Doing well. Glad to be
here. Thanks for coming on the show.
No, thanks.
And our special monthly roving reporter himself, Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
Bonjour.
How are you, David? It seems the theme tonight, we're going to cut into this. There's a lot of information. We've got a lot of guests coming on. The special Montreal Beer Fest, the Beer Mondial in Montreal, is starting tomorrow and running through the weekend. And Dave just came back from Montreal. So we're going to cut right to this because Dave's our roving reporter. He's out there checking out beer around the world.
I was smart. I went up there before everybody else showed up.
And I'll tell you what he said. Dave, how are you? So tell us about your trip to Montreal.
That's right. Read the script.
Dave wrote it.
The first time we've had a script. Well, basically, it was Boys Weekend in Montreal. And what we learned from our weekend there was that if you don't have the time or the money to go to Paris, and even if you do, you should probably go to Montreal for the weekend. It's a real mecca for food and drink. And unlike Paris, the French Canadians are actually bilingual, and they don't hate you for not being born there. And it's got incredible restaurants, a real European vibe, and but it's laid back, you know, kind of like America too. So it's sort of the best of both worlds.
Are there a couple of breweries or brew pubs that you could recommend from Montreal?
Well, definitely. You know, we started at Duduciel, which means "Oh my God," and rightfully so. It's that's sort of the place where you kind of have to start. And Stefan, one of the co-owners, really took care of us. Amazing beer list, 13 beers at the brew pub. He's really big on using like a single ingredient with a certain style. Hibiscus Wit when we were there.
Wow.
He's done a beer with morel mushrooms. We've got...
how was that?
It wasn't on when I was okay. There.
That sounds like
and
scary.
Also an absinthe beer, Ray, which I think you really would have enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
Which they will serve with a shot of real absinthe, if you ask.
Okay, nice pairing.
With the sugar, you know, with the drip.
The sugar cube and everything.
Thing. Yeah, very New Orleans. Actually, Montreal kind of reminded me a little bit of New Orleans without the darkness.
Did you see Steve Beaumont? Was he around?
No, he's like more Toronto, I think, than Montreal.
They're different?
Yeah. Yes, they are different.
So, Dave, you brought us a Duduciel beer. Which one's this?
I did. I actually brought two. I brought the Pêche Mortelle, which Brian is pouring out right now.
That's great.
Which is their coffee stout. And the great thing about these, like I said, they really know how to highlight it, you know, stay with the style, highlight a single ingredient. In this case, it's coffee. But it doesn't hit you over the head. Doesn't overwhelm you. You know, they really balance the two really well, I think. And... the other thing I noticed on their menu is a lot of their beers are 5-6%. This is one of the few that's 9%. Mm-hmm. The rest, I mean, very much, and this was true throughout Montreal. You go to these brew pubs, La Marabois, another one of our favorites, and all their beers are like it's all session beers, but like tons of flavor. And that's the other thing is the brew pubs are really driving the craft beer scene up there. It's not come from the production breweries, you know, Unibrew, of course, and the Three Musketeers, and that's about it. The rest is really coming from these brew pubs, and that's kind of where you really have to go.
Yeah, a bunch of good ones up there. Benelux is another
Benelux, another one. Shovel Blanc.
So, Dave, the title of the script that you wrote, just, you know, Dave is a great writer. He's he was an aspiring journalist before he opened a bar, and he's going to be doing a lot for us on Beer Sessions Radio. The title of the notes that he drafted for us, it says, Dave Does Montreal.
Unfortunately, I didn't literally do it that way, but it was Boys Week, and I went up with a bunch of brewers, and we went out and partied like crazy and ate like fools. I mean, the food up there, by the way, is... I mean, heart attack special.
Right.
You know, I mean, they didn't get the memo about cholesterol and the butter and the fat. I mean, they do this thing called poutine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've ever had it, but it's like greasy French fries with cheese curds on top and then thick gravy.
If
and
you
then,
like poutine.
And they'll put foie gras on it. Poutine. You know, and,
with foie gras.
With foie gras. I mean, like some will do that, you know, so it's...
I love foie gras.
It's pretty, yeah. And have it on French fries. It's even more special. That's supposedly a really good hangover cure, which you're going to need when you go up there.
Uh-huh. And wait a minute, what about Une Brewe? I love Le Fin du Monde.
Yes, you do. But and you know, and like I said, I mean, there are a couple of good production breweries, but I mean, most of them are doing what they call a red, black, and white. You know, they have a red beer, they have a stout, and then they have a white beer, and it's very English in style, but not in a good way, Ray.
Okay.
And it's just like really like it's all coming from the same boring place, mm-hmm. you know.
So what are the best brew pubs?
Well, like I said, you start with, Du Du Ciel, and then you go to Cheval Blanc and Hopfenstark, which is outside the city. And Brian can tell you about that. That's one of his breweries, Fred, yeah. Classic Fred, wearing his wearing his sarong.
Fred.
Brian, yeah. Tell us a little bit. So Brian's got 12% imports.
Yeah.
How long have you been importing that?
It's been about 2 years now.
One of our favorite new upstarts. Yeah. You know, what do? You go and personally select these beers?
Yeah, I mean, it started a bunch of years ago, really, as kind of a hobby. You know, I was going, you know, just a beer geek, you know, traveling over Europe or whatever, you know, super into it. And I got kind of obsessed a bunch of years ago with regards to, you know, sort of tracking down breweries that no one had ever really heard of, you know. So I would do that sort of obsessively. My wife would say obsessively, like 4 or 5 times a year kind of thing. Go on 2-week-long beer trips by myself and, you know, with the sole, you know, mission of basically trying to hunt down.
Is this your job now?
It is, yeah.
You have a day job or you're done with it?
The day job, thankfully, is finished. And so this is now, it's morphed from, you know, sort of like, you know, delivering beer out of the back of my Prius, you know, nights and weekends into more of a full-time thing.
I remember the first time I met you. And you came in with your wife,
yeah.
When you were just starting, and she was like, "Look, totally panicked."
That was literally I think that was probably the day after we got our like license that I was in.
She was
at
like,
the Blind Tiger.
We're gonna just die. We're gonna starve. Yeah. She was like so nervous.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But yeah, yeah. So it's going good. But Hopfenstark is one of the breweries that we're importing. Fred's a great dude. You know, as Dave well knows. Eccentric guy, but really, really talented brewer. Does a ton of saisons. That's kind of where he got his name. He won a bunch of awards actually at Mondial a couple of years ago. Really, really well known for his saisons. Also makes an excellent IPA. The Post-Colonial IPA is world class, and just does great stuff. You know, basically, you know, he's a one man operation. He's name a beer style, and he's done it, and very generally speaking, to a high end degree, and he's, you know, yeah, it's good.
No, Hopfenstark rocks. I mean, we've got a couple of kegs from you. We have the Hopfenstark, the Post-Colonial IPA.
Yes,
it's like that super IPA. Cottony, you know, hoppy IPA.
It's hoppy. It's but one of the signature, you know, it's also got a very strong sort of malty backbone to it. You know, you definitely get that big caramel presence on it, which is not just like hop juice kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's not super big. It's 6.5%, so close to sessionable, I would say, but very, very well balanced.
Why do you like this brewery? I mean, is there something about it? Are they small production?
It's very
what
small
are the
production.
Things
you know,
about Hopfenstark.
Yeah, I mean, definitely very small production, which I'm into. It wouldn't make a lot of sense for me to work with a bigger brewery. You know, I'm very small importer, and so, you know, we have to, you know, aside from loving the beer, you have to sort of have goals aligned. You know what I mean? From a from a business standpoint, I guess. So it wouldn't make sense for me to work with a bigger brewery, and so that's one reason. But the beers are what drew me to the place. I met Fred sort of by accident, you know, a little over a year ago, and we hit it off. Absolutely was floored by his saisons. You know, he's got a series of them: Saison, Station, and then a number is sort of the series. So it's Saison Station 10, Station 16, Station 55, and there's sort of a unique definition behind each one of those sort of numbers. You know, Station 10 is brewed with 10 different herbs. Station 55 is a 55 IBU saison. You know, so it goes down the rung, and you know, it's just really talented stuff. You know, I wish he was doing bottling right now. He's not. It's only draft, but still a lot of fun. And the reception's been great. And that's the kind of stuff that is, you know, it's like whatever Fred can bring into the country, we'll take, you know, because it's so small. So
do you bring it in or does he ship it in? I mean, how does that work as an importer?
He drives his car up there across the border.
Exactly, yeah.
Nobody's ever done that in this business.
That's right.
I get a truck up there and, you know, load up a bunch of pallets with some Hop and Star kegs and drive it back to...
And you've got your papers together?
Papers are in order.
The border now, I'll tell you.
Canada's very difficult. I mean, you know, we've had just all kinds of timing delays, sending empty kegs back up there, you know, taking 2 weeks to clear the border just on empty kegs and stuff. We've got it down. It's kind of an oil process, a general
question regarding the style of Saison.
Yeah.
Now, it's been one of my favorite styles since I got in the business and before. And now you're talking about 10 different Saison styles. I've always assumed a Saison style. Obviously, the classic is DuPont.
Yes.
Saison.
That's
right?
The most classic. Yes.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And in fact, I've got a Saison that we should.
From taste. That brewery?
Not from DuPont, but in that vein. Very classic Belgian Saison.
I'd love to try it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Which beer is this, Brian?
This is a beer that I'm bringing in from Belgium, brand new to the country, called Hoftendormal. Hoftendormal is the name of the brewery. It's very, very classic Belgian Saison, about 8%.
8%?
Yeah, 8%.
Now, see, that's
bigger
that's,
body. Bigger body than a traditional, you know, than a Saison DuPont. But I don't think you're going to get a lot of heat on this one, okay? But you're going to...
Smells really good.
Classic Belgian.
So I think what's happened here is we've seen an evolution in the Saison style.
Absolutely.
A huge evolution.
Yes.
I mean, it used to be Saison DuPont. There's a few guys out in Belgium that were doing it.
Right.
And now we have... an 8% Saison. But the whole point of this was for farm workers
to
drink beer and be able to work all day.
Right.
And now we have 8%.
I'm the only one who's still farming, so now everybody needs 8% beers.
You're drinking Bud Light, though, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah. There's a couple of things we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Dave has been upstate farming in Vermont, and let's finish up with Mondial, the beer fest in Montreal. Who's been up to Mondial before?
I've been there.
How would you characterize it, describe it?
It's a huge beer event with a French Canadian accent. You know, it's actually very American-esque, and Dudu Ciel, as an example, puts on all American beers at the brew pub during this week. You know, they feature America. Well, actually, tomorrow night they're doing a huge American beer night, and then they'll periodically put kegs on during that whole week. So it's very much kind of America goes north. And but also it's a great showcase for a lot of the, because the local beer scene's so good.
Were there a lot of American people up there, and a lot of American people from New York?
Oh yeah. It's just they all go, and but it's a great event and a great food. It showcases the city, you know, and people take trips out to Unibrew and see what's going on out there, and it's just a great chance to really check out a great city that a lot of people, for whatever reason, they just don't know about it or how great it is, you know. So,
how long have they been doing it now? How many years?
I don't even know. Do you know?
Not sure, but it's been going for a while.
For a while.
Yeah. So yeah. It's got quite a reputation. I mean, it draws international attention.
I mean, I went 5 years ago for the first time, it had already been around for a number of years.
I've been hearing about it for years.
So probably 10 years.
I've got to get my butt up there one of these days.
Yeah, get your butt up there.
Okay.
Cool. Let's all go. We'll do a show from there. I think
we should do a remote next year.
Definitely. Lots going on at Beer Sessions Radio. We're going to take a little break, listen to some music. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you so much, Beer Sessions Radio.
Your past. I just want
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on heritageradionetwork.com. Our sponsor is greatbrewers.com. And thank you to Good Beer Seal, Association of New York City Good Beer Bars. Great Brewers, without you, we wouldn't be on the air. And thank you so much. Great Brewers is doing so much. They have a distributor, Union Beer. All the great beers in New York we know come from greatbrewers.com. Their website has the Great Brewers test. They have the 20 tests, 20 question tests, and the 100 question tests. If you want to learn about beer, you know, go take the 20 question test on greatbrewers.com. You get a sense of what you want. You can stay on their website and take the test. Is this a secret?
Did you take the test yet?
I've taken the test, I passed 100 because I kept their website on. So when it came to history, education.
I think that's cheating, yeah. Jimmy. I think that's cheating.
I got to use the greatbrewers.com website to pass their test. And I think that's what you should do. But
is that that's what it takes to allow them to sell you beer?
They don't sell you beer unless you pass the test.
Exactly. They make the best test.
So we've been talking about Montreal and some other things. And one more thing about Montreal, Dave. We're so psyched that you're coming on every month as our roving reporter. We got Dave from Blind Tiger. It's like you are a legend in the beer world. I got to bring that up every time you come on. Tell us again, how did you get into being a bar owner, and why did you, you know, end up serving such good beer?
Well, like I said, I was driving a cab, and I just hated doing that. You know, who wants to drive a cab for the rest of their life? And so
but so many people, New York City is like the easy bar town. You get like cheap liquor, cheap beer. Why did you serve good beer?
Running a regular bar seemed, I had managed a bar down in Tribeca called the River Run, which was like sort of a forerunner in the craft beer thing. And I just, after doing that, I was like, man, if you're not doing like something interesting with it, it's the most boring job on the planet, which Ray can tell you. It's like running a bar is boring. And so the only way to make it interesting is to have something that's about it that's changing all the time. So that's what, you know, I figured that out really quick. And that's sort of where the blind
one of the rules that Dennis and my business partner Dennis and I decided is that we're not going to buy any beer that we can't drink all of if we had to close tomorrow.
That's actually a good theory. Yeah. That's good strategy.
But why was it beer and not like whiskey or champagne?
Well, for Ray, it was whiskey and beer because beer tequila wasn't enough for him. But and actually, you know, at the Tiger too, we had great whiskeys and not as many as they did, but great. I happen to love tequila, so we had a lot of tequila. But really, it was always kind of, you know, that was just sort of a peripheral. It was always about the beer. And I don't know what it was. I think it was like the stories that come along with it. You know, these guys that are behind it, you know, you start to get, you start meeting these guys and they're just so interesting, you know, and they're, none of them are making any money, you know, they're so passionate and they'll do it for free or not even for free. They actually lose money. And you just get drawn into that. You know, and for me, that's kind of what it was about. It was about the people in the business. You just can't top them, you know.
Well, I'm so happy that you are part of our business, man. You've been such a great leader in the beer world. And we got some special guests. They just walked in. There's a, you know, part of good beer is the growing homebrew movement. Danielle Cifaro and Benjamin Stutz of Brooklyn Homebrew are here.
Hello.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Great. So tell us about your store and what you're doing and talk right into the mic if you don't mind, and you know, let's learn something about you guys.
I guess we're about a year old now.
Officially a year old, yes.
It's been.
What's the name of your store?
Brooklyn Homebrew.
Thank you.
And do you guys have a website?
You can look at our website. It's www.brooklyn-homebrew.com. Mm-hmm. We also have a blog, brooklynhomebrew.blogspot.com.
And where's the store?
And the store is on 3rd Avenue and 8th Street. Right next to 420 Blackbirds, which just opened, the new pie shop that everybody's been talking about.
420 Blackbirds?
Yep.
Delicious.
So why did you guys get into the homebrew movement or homebrew store? Tell us your story and what brought you to this?
Well, we were chefs, you know, like yourself, for a long time and just really wanted to get out of the kitchen. And so we decided, you know, we thought about opening a bar and we realized what we're up against, you know. Not glamorous, probably.
Smart idea.
Really expensive. And
very smart.
And we had no business experience to speak of. So we thought if we're going to risk everything, we might as well start small as possible. So we, you know, started selling homebrew supplies. There was a definite need for it. We moved here from Chicago And they had a fantastic shop. Pretty much every other city has a homebrew shop, but for whatever reason, there was a long period here in New York where there was no shop. So,
yeah, I remember when there was one up
Branch. Around,
yeah, like Rockefeller Center, or there was, you know, it was back in mid-90s when I started homebrewing, and there was one place, and then it closed, and there was nothing. Actually, there was one down on Spring Street, too. Like
that's
wine.
Right, the old Italian place,
yeah,
wine and beer place. Right across from the Spring Lounge.
Right, exactly.
I remember that. And I used to go there and buy stuff.
Yeah, and then nothing. Mm-hmm. Just like a wasteland for a long time.
Yeah,
we moved here from Chicago, and we didn't make beer for 6 months because I refused to buy it online. I didn't want it showing up in the mail. I wanted to be able to walk into a store and see the ingredients. So
there was a shop in Staten Island, and we just kept trying to figure out what the easiest route to get Staten Island was without a car.
Mm-hmm. Without a car.
Without a car.
The ferry
can't
and then
really
walking.
Happen.
People making homebrew in Staten Island. That's pretty
but
amazing.
But what did you guys
people
do?
People making homebrew.
Cool. You guys, before you opened the shop, were you selling supplies? How did it work out?
We started extraordinarily small. We had no bank loan because the bank would not give us a loan, even though we had great credit.
Join the club.
So what we did is we got a very small investment from a friend. He gave us a few grand.
Are you still friends?
We are still friends.
That's unusual.
And we appreciate what he did very, very much. And we just made, our first purchase was yeast, because that's what everybody said they needed the most, is they want fresh yeast, because they don't like getting it, you know, mail order. Sometimes yeast is just not as fresh. So we made a yeast purchase, and that's where we started. And we just started selling yeast, and from there it just grew, and our official storefront opened in the beginning of January.
So you sell all the gadgets, all the carboys.
Everything you can imagine.
The stoppers, the timers, the calibrators, and the...
All the big fancy pots we have.
Sabco systems. And
unfortunately, that we do not have.
We can get them if you need them.
Okay. You know,
I've been eyeing one of those things. But
I was talking to a guy last night at the bar at DBA in Brooklyn, and he's a home distiller.
Oh, there's a lot of those, too.
Yeah, and it's legal now, as long as you don't make too much. And it was very...
Are you sure it's legal?
Mm-hmm. I'm positive.
Okay.
I'm positive it's legal.
Wow. And Brooklyn Homebrew. Wait a minute. So you guys are Brooklyn Homebrew.
Do you sell
Brooklyn
stills?
Homebrew.
What's the website
Not
again?
To be mistaken with anybody else.
What's the website?
www.brooklynhomebrew.com One more time. www.brooklyn/homebrew.com
So you brought us this beer tonight.
We brought you a beer tonight. We actually brought you two different beers. They're both made with the same wort. But they both have two different yeasts.
And you made these beers.
We made these beers. The one that you're drinking right now is made with Unibrew's yeast, actually, because you guys were just talking about Montreal
theme,
and Quebec.
Don't forget it.
And it's brewed with cherries. And then the other beer that we have is a French Saison.
So these are sour cherries. Or
another
so
Saison?
You make these beers because it's your hobby?
Or it's definitely our hobby, but now it's our life.
And do you make beers to give recipes to your customers?
Yes.
Do you let your customers taste the beers?
From time to time.
Do you sell your recipes, or do you like just
our
like
recipes are our kits?
There?
Actually, all of our kits are our
so
recipes
you sell
that
kits.
We brewed and tried.
So you put together kits.
Yep, we have lots and lots.
So even you can do it.
Yeah. Well, I've done it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I have a great
first
idea.
Time. Good second time.
Let's pick a day. You're going to bring Ray into your shop. You're going to set him up with a kit.
That would
one
be
time
so good.
Made,
that would be a great.
Ray can
promote,
do it.
Yeah.
He made homebrew once.
If Ray can do it, anybody can do it.
Second time didn't work out. So
the third time is good.
He's going to do it. So will you guys do that?
Have yeah,
Ray
definitely.
Come into your shop.
And I will donate it to you. I will donate it to you and let you brew it.
No, we've got a huge budget here. We've got sponsors. They'll cover it.
They love us.
Well, homebrew. So brooklynhomebrew.com. I'm also amazed at the growth of the homebrew movement, and we love to feature for people from it, because only a few years ago there were a lot of guys, like I would say the older generation, who were part of some of the homebrew clubs, and honestly it was like they were stuck in some time warp, and their beers weren't that good. It might have been because there weren't any homebrew shops.
You know, every single year people come out with new products to just make homebrewing easier, and that's really what I think it is. Sanitation is a lot easier than
well,
it used to
be. Well, that's the hard part. The sanitation is the most important part.
Everything is just more simplified. It's constantly being simplified.
That's great.
Well, you know,
all good beer comes from homebrewers. I mean, that's where it all starts.
Yes,
so.
Exactly.
And every great brewer started.
Yeah.
And so many pros committed to homebrewing, bar owners and breweries, and it's a passionate industry. Yeah.
And when you do it, then you appreciate a great beer.
Right.
You know? Dave, have you ever homebrewed?
I have homebrewed. And in fact, I'm starting to get into it now that it's part of my farming thing. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to get into it. Actually, I've been making a lot of mead And
we just made our first
Sizer, which is cider and mead combination. I've got two whiskey barrels that I bought from Kentucky.
Oh, nice.
In my barn, filled with both. And it's actually tasting pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, but the problem with mead is you got to age it for like a year,
yep.
Yeah.
Which is really painful.
Patience. So these are first filled with bourbon.
Yes.
And now.
And there's a little bourbon at the bottom, which is key.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
Sloshing around in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fill it with mead. And we were like so unorganized. You know, I was doing it with some farmer friends of mine, and it. It's very unorganized, probably totally oxidized, but it still tastes good though.
Dave, would you go to the brooklynhomebrew.com and would you go and buy some supplies for your home?
I would if your driver takes me there.
Yes, Jimmy's got a limo that picks us up.
It's so awesome.
Takes us to the bar. It's to the radio show every week.
We have a big dinner at Roberta's afterwards, and
Jimmy
then we
pays for everything.
We get chauffeured around with Jimmy.
Beer Sessions Radio has big ambitions, a small ship.
Then we get back into the limo afterwards, and then we go out titty bars.
Usually, yeah.
I would say you know,
living
the
dream with Ray.
What do we do, Ray? Tell our typical night on Beer Sessions Radio. We finish up here in our studio. We walk across the courtyard to
a huge
Roberta's restaurant.
Roberta's restaurant, which
we
is
get steak
for two.
For you folks that have never been to Roberta's, I just want to tell you about it. It's
we
a beautiful, spacious place. It's gorgeous. They have waiters and waitresses. It's fantastic.
The air conditioning.
They've got
works.
The spacious studio in the back. It's lounge chairs. It's like it's kind of like Las Vegas, but better. And
but what we try to do is we try to sucker in some
little plug for Vegas
reps from some breweries. And I promise you, in the third segment tonight, we're going to have a beer brewery rep guy in from Southampton, and he's going to pick up our dinner. And that's what we do.
Oh, that's right.
We come
Spencer
out here.
Spencer doesn't know that yet.
But we're hoping that the homebrew movement will grow because there's not enough right now. There's you guys, and then there's Brooklyn Brew Shop.
Yep.
That's plenty.
Who've
that's
also
plenty.
Been on the show.
Don't need
you don't want any more.
That is definitely enough.
I'm going to put in a plug
world
for this.
World domination.
My friends at the Green Market, we're gonna take a little break here. My friends at the Green Market have said, let's push some of the local farmers to grow hops.
Yes,
yeah. Hops. Local hops.
We have been selling hops. Yeah. They're done now. Hop rhizomes are sold out. Yeah. But we sold a lot of hop rhizomes this year.
I just planted 40 crowns
I'm hoping,
at my farm.
You know, the more we need a hop farm in Brooklyn. If anybody wants to do it, anywhere. Please
even
do
the
it.
Roof here at Roberta's, they have a
farm. They're growing stuff upstairs.
So how many acres of hops could we grow that would support the local craft beer and homebrew movement?
Probably not enough.
Well, tell me, honestly, because we could put this out on the air.
It would take a couple of years for it to actually build up. You might be able to do it with 40 acres.
So we need at least 40 acres of local hops.
You
so
might be able to find that on the east side of Brooklyn.
Queens Farm should start growing.
Somebody should.
Hops.
Yeah.
And rooftop farms.
And then we'll get into grain.
Yeah, there's no reason that the East Coast shouldn't have more hop farms and at least a barley farm. Most of the barley farms are in the Midwest.
I talked to the head of the Green Market the other day, and he said, listen, if you guys can get someone to make even 10% of their beer from local grains and hops, they would gladly, you know, bestow the title of local brew on it. Yep. So that's something to think about. We're going to take
that's
a little break
great.
Here. This is Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network, sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you.
Bye.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Tonight, our co-host, Ray Dieter, and our special roving reporter, Dave Broderick. The Good Beer Seal is a special group of New York City beer bars. They're growing. Last week, we added 12 new beer bars to the list at GoodBeerSeal.com. Ray, tell us about the party at DBA.
Well, my goodness, we had a great time. What a great turnout. The place was packed. The best thing about in this business, to look at your bar when it's packed with your friends and people that are actually paying for their drinks, it's one of the best things in the world. And we had great food. My friend Glenn, Simon Glenn, came out and from Chop Chop. He's there on every Sunday. He did a New Orleans barbecue. We had
great. Yeah, I will say you it was a really great party. We had over 20 of the really good beer bar owners in New York City. We had some media. We had the Chup Shop, which made like New Orleans style wings and some other things.
Yep.
It was a really great party. Thank you for hosting, man.
My pleasure. Well, we should do it every week. Every Tuesday after beer sessions, we should go to DBA and have a huge party.
So this was supposed to be
we'll
the
take
IPA
your limo,
night.
Jimmy.
Listen up. It was supposed to be the IPA night. And of course, we talk about a lot of things every time on Beer Sessions Radio. We're back here with Brian Ewing from 12% Imports. Hey. Brian, what you brought us a special IPA. What is this beer?
Well, I brought you a couple of things in keeping with the theme. The first one is a beer called Valère Extra from a little brewery in East Flanders, Belgium called Contreras. And this is really sort of kind of a hybrid beer, I'd call it. Somewhere sort of between a Belgian blonde and an American single IPA, okay? So you're going to get a lot of fruitiness from the house yeast strain that Friedrich from Contreras is using, but also really well balanced by American Amarillo hops that he's actually importing from the West Coast of the United States for this beer as well. But what you get is a super fruity on the palate, very soft. I get a little pineapple on the palate of this one, balanced bitterness in the finish, and relatively sessionable. It's about 6.5%.
Do I have any here?
We'll make sure that that
happens.
Let's fix that.
Brian, what I wanted to ask you is, I've been a big fan of yours in the last year. When I go to your website,
yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure our listeners will understand this, is 12, like the number 12, percentimports.com.
Yep.
I always get lost when I'm trying to find your beers because you have first the name of the brewery.
Name of the brewery.
And then they always have these individual labels, like this is Valère's Extra.
Right.
What do we suggest to our viewers? Just go to your website and go crazy?
Yeah, I mean, the website's organized so that it basically, you know, tries to give a little bit of the history of the brewery before just sort of like, you know, carte blanche listing all of our beers. So if you go to 12%imports.com, what you'll find is, you know, a bunch of information, but one of the main sections that I would point anyone to is the brewery section, where we have all, you know, sort of 12 breweries that we've currently brought into the United States. We've got more in the works, but never post that stuff until it's actually here. But anyway, it'll list all 12 breweries with a link to each of those, and then sort of like a little history behind the brewery, why we were drawn to them, you know, what we think is great about them, and then underneath that, links to each individual beer.
And Brian's great. He's almost more like a wine importer than a beer importer. He goes out, he finds his beers, and we love them. We got a question from a viewer here. Actually, I would say that some of the best beer bars in New York carry Brian's beers. Like, I know I can go to Spite and Dival, and they'll always have some 12% imports. Every once in a while, he'll put all his lines over to it. Jimmy's number 43 has done some really great events. Have any other bars been doing 12% nights?
Yeah, we did a great one at Blind Tiger back in February. I mean, they do the most amazing, you know, Wednesday nights, as I'm sure everyone in this room knows, and probably many people listening know. Their Wednesday night sort of beer lineups are very intense and very cool. And so we did one of those back in February, which was probably the single biggest event that we've done to date. But yeah, you know, we've done stuff. I mean, you know, name sort of a beer place in the city. And
name a couple other beer bars that you've done.
Beer Table has definitely been a big one. You know, I know you guys have had Justin on before, and Justin and Trish have been very supportive. So we've done stuff there. And then we do a lot outside of New York as well. Philly has been, you know, I mean, Philly's a huge beer scene right now, and so we do a lot down there. As a matter of fact, next week is Philly Beer Week, which I'm sure everyone knows, and it's going to be crazy. We're flying out five of our brewers from Belgium. They'll be here for the first time, and we're going to do events every night of the week at, like, Monk's, at Eulogy, at Tria, at Capone's. It'll be crazy and a lot of fun.
So Philly Beer Week.
Yeah, I think Philly sells more Belgian beer than New York does.
Mm-hmm. Does it really?
Yeah, I think they're actually the biggest Belgian beer market in the United
States. That's all about Tom Peters. I mean, he's like the major proponent.
Who's Tom Peters?
Exactly.
Who's Tom Peters? Tom Peters is one of my good friends, and he owns a ton of bars in the Philadelphia area. Most famously is Monk's Cafe, Monk's Belgian Cafe.
Yeah.
Great bar. Great. The food is amazing. The lamb chops are just to die for.
Yep.
But the list of beer is great. Tom goes out and seeks out beer. He actually personally goes out and seeks out beer. I've hung out with Tom more often in Germany and in Belgium and in England than I have actually in Philadelphia or New York. That's a fact.
So he's a leader. How would you compare the Beer Mondial in Montreal to Philly Beer Week?
that's tough. I mean,
no, it's a recurring theme. That's how we work.
Yeah,
on
I went last year. I went down to Philly Beer Week for the first time, and I mean, there's 650 events in one week. I mean, it's like so overwhelming.
The entire city just becomes Beer Week. Every bar, the museums, everything is about beer, and it's great. I would love to see that kind of a thing happen in New York.
They're our hero.
Never will happen.
No,
we're carving out our little piece with Beer Month in July. Good beer.
July,
seal.
Good beer month.
Good beer month, right?
Yes. New York City's.
The mayor has declared.
The mayor Bloomberg, for the second year, will proclaim July 2010 is New York City Good Beer Month.
Absolutely. We're carving at our place.
We're going to Philly next week. Where should we go?
Well, actually, I'm not going to be on the show next week because I will be in Philly on the 8th. I'm going down to Tom Peters' Monk's Cafe for a Lambic Ale dinner with Frank Bone and Armand from Drie Fontaine, who I haven't seen in a while since I was
They make some great beer.
Oh, my God. Some of the great
Lambic
stuff.
Lambic night.
Yeah.
And Dave, you're going down to Philly. Where would you be going?
Well, I would definitely go to Earth Bread, which is up in the Mount Airy section, to go see Tom Baker.
And who
sort of left the New York scene and opened up a brew pub down there, which is an amazing place.
You know, I've not
he used
been
to
there
be
yet.
Heavyweight, and yeah, you got to go. It's totally worth it. He's so funny. Philly Beer Week drives him crazy because it's like lunacy for him. Well, actually, he used to make a beer called Lunacy, and
he did.
And so it sort of drives him a little nuts, but he appreciates it, I'm sure.
Let's move on to the. We have an email question of the week. Every week, you can call in or email questions to Good Beer Seal. You can call us at 718-497-2128 or email us at beersessions@gmail.com. Anthony Rosario, I don't know where you're from. Hopefully, you love beer, but you gave us a great question. I was reading a bottle of Hennepin yesterday, and it instructed me to pour slowly but vigorously. I am not entirely sure what that means. We got a special guest here, Spencer Niebuhr from Southampton Public House. Spencer, what do you think about that comment on the bottle of Omegang?
That's my entrance right there.
really?
He just walked. Okay,
sounds Spencer, very sexual. That's
Spencer just walked in from Southampton.
That's my entrance.
He's a smart guy. Tell us, why would they put slowly but vigorously on the bottle of Hennepin?
Well, Hennepin is a saison, so I guess I would say that the great brewers at Omegang would want to stir up that yeast and then bring that characteristic into the glass. I'm not really a huge supporter of that, so I don't really stir vigorously and shake.
Yeah, I've never... Ray, have you ever seen this before? Slowly, pour slowly but vigorously.
I've not read that, but I understand the concept behind it. But I got to say, Spencer is here from Southampton, which is one of my favorite breweries, my favorite local breweries. Omegang is another local brewery, fairly local. But Southampton, you guys are making some of the best beer. Phil Markowski, one of the great brewers in the country.
Nice, Ray.
If not the world.
You know what I tried today? You guys have this whole portfolio. I'm not introducing you fully because you've been on the show before, but to new listeners, it's Spencer from Southampton. You have some great beers out. Today, I tasted the Abbott 12, the quadruple ale.
Yeah.
And you guys are making some really good small batch beers.
Sure.
When are you guys going to put them on draft so we can serve them in our Good Beer Seal bars?
Good question. I mean, I'm probably opening Pandora's box if I say anything, so I won't. But that being said, which was nothing.
You came to beer sessions to say nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. We look to do that in the future. Cool. A lot of people ask for that. Yeah, right now we do. There are 750s in very small batch quantities. And because these are Belgian re-fermentated beers, it's kind of our belief that you're getting a better taste out of the bottle. It's not to say you can't do that in draft, but you're talking about keg conditioning these beers as we adhere to... You know, keeping that beer sacred. We want to keep it in the bottle.
I so respect that. I got to say, I've always been kind of a fan of the real beers, and I know that a lot of the beers that are actually put into barrels that we sell in our beer bars are specifically designed for the American market, because Americans mm-hmm. want to drink their draft beers, and that's great. And a lot of them are also good, but the real thing is in a bottle conditioned 750.
Yeah, keg condition just isn't the same. We were talking about this earlier today. It's just not. And they remember in the late 90s, they started coming out with those keg condition kegs, and like they secondary fermentate. You couldn't pour them, and just
they,
never
they were
really
just too
seemed
wild.
To, yeah, it didn't really work.
The yeast was just too crazy to settle down. But what bugs me? Well, it doesn't bug me. It's people. A lot of our customers, and I love our customers because it's the most important part of our business is taking care of our people. The people that love beer, they don't understand that the stuff that we're drinking has a history and has a tradition to it. And we try to. I personally, I know you do, Tate. You guys do too. All you guys do. We try to keep as true to the original stuff that's being served back in Belgium, back in Germany, back in wherever, back in England. And when they try to Americanize the beer, they change the hop. They put it into a barrel. It's kind of disappointing because it's not the stuff that I went over and had at that brewery that day with those great people that I was with. You know, I can't bring the people back. I can't bring that day. I can't bring the weather back. But I can bring that bottle that was made at the same place. And it's important to keep this stuff true.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Absolutely. Something about the Abbott 12 you were saying before is that, and actually this goes along with what you're saying, is that in 2 years, you know, 3 years, you can actually bring that bottle back and you could relive that, that memory that you had just for a split second.
Right.
You know, and obviously
it'll keep for you're saying it'll keep for 2 or 3 years?
More than that, our Belgian quad, yeah, we open up, I just had no four about a month ago.
This is delicious, phenomenal. By the
way. So that's a beer we could buy and lay down and keep it in a cellar?
Yeah, sure.
Like a wine?
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to that beer? Last time I was out there, which was last... August, I went out and picked hops with you guys for the wet hop. I noticed there was a barrel of something aging down in your cellar.
Mm. All right. Now,
whatever happened to that?
It's being released as the Homage, and that's our barrel-aged version of the beer we're going to try right now. And so we're actually very excited.
Is that going to make New York, or?
It'll make as far as 40 Bowden Square, Southampton, New York.
What you're saying is we have to drive out to the Hamptons.
Not even to Williamsburg.
Unfortunately, no.
Spencer, where is Southampton Public House? Give us the address.
Is it? It is 40 Bowden Square in Southampton, New York, and you're taking the, let's say if you're coming from Brooklyn, just get on the LIE. Travel all the way down, exit 70, hook a right, go all the way down to Sunrise, and just keep going east.
So for July, good
mile
month,
and a half from the beach.
It might be in our power. We should drive out to the brewery.
Yeah, on a Saturday morning. A good drive on a Saturday morning.
Celebrate July, good beer.
6 hours.
Yeah. That's
6 hours.
Nice. That's the best time to go. Actually, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I figured since we were doing IPAs today, and of course we brought a Southampton IPA, which is pretty much like a hybrid of the English styles with East Kent Goldings and Fuggles, and then hops from the Pacific Northwest. We brought that. But also brought our Trappist IPA, which we were just talking about before. And our take on that is very much what these Belgian brewers would make if they went really big and hoppy, which they're doing now.
So we're drinking, is the Trappist IPA.
You got it.
Southampton Trappist IPA, it's really good.
Have you noticed that the Belgian brewers are like sort of responding to what's going on here in this country?
In a big way.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel? I mean, I'm not quite sure I'm crazy about that.
Well, I think it's good because they're paying attention to each other. I mean, it's sort of a give and take.
It's evolving, like the saison. But I like that traditional Belgian hop style when they start throwing the cascade in there, you know?
No, I know. But, I mean, you don't want everything to stay this, you know, you don't want them to get stuck. Mm-hmm. And I think it sort of, if it's... makes them enjoy it more, enjoy what they do
them being
more.
Who, the Belgians?
The Belgians, yeah.
Are they brewing for Belgians or are they brewing for Americans?
Well, that's the thing. I think they're really brewing for the American.
And that's the question.
When they make that really hoppy beer, I think that the people that really enjoy Belgian styles really will continue to drink the Belgian beer.
I'm telling you.
I think you're right about that.
When you're over there, you need some hops every once in a while to cut some of that sugar.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. I can't sleep at night when I'm over there.
I know.
Yeah.
My teeth Ray, start to hurt.
Tonight, exactly. At DBA tonight, is Spencer's coming over. We're going to have a Southampton night.
Spencer's coming over. What beers we have got tonight? We've got a lineup of your stuff.
Yeah, we got the we got a ton of bottles. We got the IPA on draft, German Alt beer, our double white.
Ooh.
Got the Keller Pils, which
that
I
Keller
was in.
Pils
nice beer.
It's fucking Keller. Amazing.
Yeah.
It is.
That away, Ray.
It is.
Yeah, and then I brought out an oatmeal stout from the brewery, too. Just
we got a double white on, too.
Yeah. Yep.
And this came in the trunk of your car, probably.
You know it. Yep.
So, you know, another session of Beer Sessions Radio is winding down. We're on for 45 minutes, and that may change, but I want to thank Ray Dieter for coming out tonight, Dave Broderick, and so a couple special events coming up at the Good Beer Seal Bars. Tonight, at Rattle and Hum, there's Trogues Brewery Night. I met Chris Trogner today. He's a cool guy. He's here in New York, so they're doing a special event there. Bar Great Harry also has an IPA night tonight. Sorry we didn't do more IPAs, but if you check out Bar Great Harry's website, you can learn more about that. Jimmy's Number 43 has a $10 beer tasting, Wild and Sour Ales with Shelton Brothers. On Thursday, if you want to meet Dan Shelton, who knows Dan Shelton?
Yeah.
Great importer, yeah. Shelton Brothers. He will be at Jimmy's Number 43. There's a vegetarian beer dinner. Dan's he's a vegetarian, and it's mostly a meatless dinner with some of his greatest beers.
He'll be
Mondays,
arguing.
Every Monday, DBA Brooklyn with Ray, Liquids of Interest. Next Tuesday, June 8th, Rattle and Hum again, East Coast versus West Coast IPA. So there's a chance to learn about IPAs at Rattle and Hum. And thanks so much, guys. We're going to call it a night. Beer Sessions Radio, sponsored now by www.greatbrewers.com and by the Good Beer Seal. Have a good night. Thank you.
The fact that I like to drink beer, this little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.